Thank you so much for listening to Reasons to Be Joyful. This week, my guest is a complete and utter joy spreader. He is brilliantly funny. He's a joy to be around. He is Chris McCausland. If you don't go and see him on tour, what are you doing with yourselves? But before you book your tickets, have a listen to this. I hope you enjoy it as much as I loved being with him. Yeah, 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 yeah. I cannot tell you how excited I am, Chris, because Chris McCausland, my children suddenly think I'm all right because I'm talking to you. And they were saying to me, do you know, okay, so he's done this, he's done this. And my elder daughter used to watch you on CBeebies.
And your daughter's now a grown adult, which makes me feel ridiculously old. So, yeah, thanks for that.
They were talking to me as if they owned you. It's really funny how people do that with comedians. It seems to be that people like ownership of a comedian that they found, somebody that they found really funny. And the minute you say, oh, no, I've watched them, I know them, I see them, I've seen their shows. Oh, but you haven't known them as long as I have. It's really funny. Well, Do people like that with you?
I used to on this kids show that we're talking about, back on CBeebies, when your daughter would have been probably about 4 or 5 years old.
Yeah.
I was a character that ran a market stall on this program called Me Too, which in hindsight is the most inappropriately named kids show in history.
That was the next conversation I was going to have with you.
Yeah.
My word.
It is, and the thing is now is if you go onto Google and type in my name, one of the suggestions that comes up with is, do you mean Chris McCausland, Me Too? And people must, they don't know the show.
Oh!
They must go, oh my God, what's he done, the dirty bastard?
Okay, we mean two different things here. This was the kids' show that you did.
Maybe I've got a reputation from people who don't know what the show is. They must think, oh my God, what's he done?
But also, sort of coming up to date, the things that were on Channel 4, so Wonders of the World you'll never see.
Wonders of the World I can't see.
You can't see. And also Scared of the Dark.
Yeah.
Now, it suddenly brought you to a whole new audience, both of those things. And I'll just put it out there. So saying it once, not going to get too gushy, but I loved them. And you are so real on television. You're so honest and so funny. But that bit doesn't... We'll talk about the funny bit after. But you're so real.
Oh, good.
I'm
glad it comes... I mean, it's difficult for me to appreciate it because I can't bear to watch myself You know, I've got that thing that most comedians have got where you watch it and you go, oh, why did they say it like that? Why did they shout that? Why am I, you know...
Do you really? You do that? Are you very critical?
It makes me... sometimes makes people want to bang my head against the wall, you know? Because you sound... Especially when... You know, if I watch myself on something to see how I did on it, you know, I'm hearing myself the way I don't usually hear myself. So in your head, you always sound different. So when you hear yourself on the telly, oh God, do I really sound like that?
Yes, you do, because I've now met you in real life and that's how you sound on the telly. But can we talk about Scared of the Dark?
Yeah.
Because that, it made us think. And I know it was extraordinary to be a part of, and it was extraordinary to watch, but it made us all think. And for you, it seemed almost life changing, or is that me being too dramatic?
Yeah. So I mean, just for people listening, Scared of the Dark was on Channel 4, and it ran over 6 consecutive nights, and it was me and 7 other people, Paul Gascoigne, Chris Eubank, Scarlett Moffat, and a few others. In a bunker for 8 solid days in complete pitch black. And it was a celebrity reality show, I suppose, in the how will we all cope? I was the only one that really... I think I was like the control group, in that I was the one most adjusted because I can't see anything anyway. But I don't think what we realised is how much the others would struggle with it and how much depth it would have as a program. It surprised us all, really, the amount of emotion in it, you know. And it was a real privilege to be part of it and to get to work with Paul Gascoigne, and you know, as divisive as he is, I will never forget in my life, you know, spending that time with Chris Eubanks.
There's so much I could say, but I'm not going to, because I want to make this about you. But what was so extraordinary was that none of us can imagine what you went through when you went through it, and yet these people are going through what you went through. Suddenly, can see, can't see. And you're the way you mothered them, the way you cared for them, and you kept your humour throughout, and obviously the others didn't, as we witnessed.
Yeah, it was, it was a real experience for me as well. I mean, going into it, I thought, well, I'll just be the control group. I'll be the most easily adjusted, and won't it be funny to see how much they all struggle? But, for me, to have the tables turned and to be the most able out of a group of people, and to be somebody who often needs other people's help and assistance, and to suddenly be the one who can provide the help and assistance, wasn't really something that I anticipated being so such a huge part of the show or the experience. And I reveled in that. You know, I think I said it felt like a holiday from dependence, you know, because usually I'm the one that's dependent on others. But you've got, you know, world champion Chris Eubank, who I have to take the toilet when he needs a wee. you know, somebody who is so alpha male, who is so, you know, independent, who is so... such a big stature of a person, who you take this one sense away and he just kind of, you know, almost crumbles into this smaller, more terrified, more anxious, more embarrassed human being. You know, I think he was scared to make himself look silly at times, and he really struggled. And it was a real experience, you know, but I didn't anticipate what it was going to be before doing it, really.
I hate it when people ask this. I'm going to ask the question. I hate it when people ask, but do you feel changed after doing that show?
I would hope that I don't know if I feel changed. I feel like I've experienced something that I'll never forget.
Okay.
But I returned to normality afterwards, you know?
Yeah.
And whereas I would hope that maybe the others feel more changed, because I think to have a sense taken away from you in the way that they did is quite humbling, isn't it? You know, to return to normality from their perspective. So to go back to being able to see and back to being able to doing everything. Maybe it changes their perspective and the people watching's perspective on people who are blind. Because going into it, I didn't really think that that's what the show was going to be. It was about halfway through when I was there. I was like, wow, this is actually going to be a show that is going to create such a level of awareness in terms of blindness that I don't think you could have done if you'd set out to do it. We're going to try and make a show that really creates a level of awareness about what it's like to be blind. I think it would have been crass. I think it would have been banging the message over the head and wouldn't have had any impact. But because it was almost like a natural byproduct of this experience that we didn't plan on, that kind of just organically materialized. You know what I mean? I think it was really powerful. And so, you know, I'll remember being part of that, you know, for the rest of my days. It was, and to have Gaza in my contact list, and to be mates with Paul. I was 13 in 1990, you know, and the greatest footballer in the world back then, and now we're in touch, you know.
That's
and
so cool.
what a joy!
What a smile you've got when you mention that as well. That's so fabulous. People are never sure. I mean, there are many people who don't know how to interact or how to treat or how to behave or how to be with somebody who is blind. And I think that's what it did it, because you were being so honest, like I said, and with your travel show as well, you're so honest about it. And when we met outside, I just said, you need to take my arm. And not for a second did you say, no, I don't need help. Or, you know, nobody's ever quite sure what to say. My friends who are deaf, they say to me, just, I am deaf. Now that's how you treat me, because that is what I am. And I think that people are slightly scared. People don't know whether to overstep or understep the mark.
Yeah, I think always just ask. You know, some people will go not offer help because they're worried about offering help, whether they're overstepping the mark. And some people will go in too hard and kind of just move you around, just grab you.
Going too hard, I love that.
You know, I think you need to be here, and just kind of, you know, shuffle you off somewhere else. So I think always just ask, you know, because I need help. You know, I often need assistance, and I'm grateful for it a lot of the time. And sometimes I don't, but it's always nice to be asked, you know.
So when you went through, you were very young, when you went through losing your sight, I mean, none of us can imagine going through that. And yet here you are on top of it all. You're this celebrated and loved comedian. You made you just came out on top from this, Chris. It's fantastic. That's why I'm a super fan. Just because also you're very, very, very funny.
So, I've been doing stand-up for over 20 years now.
20 years, yeah.
And so I was blind when I started doing stand-up. Yeah. And I got into stand-up because I was a fan of comedy. Not because I kind of thought, well, I'll just talk about being blind. So when I started doing stand-up, I didn't mention it really, and I just did massive Eddie Izzard fan. I talked about random stuff, and my kind of thought in my head was that I want to make the audience forget about that aspect of me.
Yeah.
And I suppose in one sense, I felt like I was challenging preconceptions that, you know, an audience would think, oh, this is going to be 20 minutes, 30 minutes, a blind joke. So I'll do the opposite, and I'll leave them going, oh, that wasn't what I thought it was going to be. And I think as I got older as well, and you become a dad and you have, you know, you just get a bit more comfortable in your own skin, I look back and I go, well, maybe that was part of it. And maybe back then I wasn't as comfortable in my own skin. And it was also about making me forget and make me pretend that was normal, you know. But I think that's always been my aim with everything I've done over the last 20 years, and especially now on the telly, is I like the idea of leaving of sending out that positive message without sending out a message, if you know what I mean.
So I do.
People see you on the telly. I think it's more powerful to make people forget about disability than remind them all the time. And so for people to see me getting to do What I Lie to You and Have I Got News for You and all these things, hopefully that kind of sends people away thinking a bit more positively about other people with you know, disadvantages, but without actually having to bash them over the head with it all the time. So that I think that's always been quite important to what I've the approach I've tried to take, really.
It's quite you got to have big balls, quite frankly, to do stand up. Every comedian that I've ever spoken to, and everyone who does it. I mean, I always say the same thing, so apologies, but how the hell? I mean, it's terrifying. What happens if people don't laugh?
I mean, do you know, so like when I started doing it, like, as I said, I was always a huge comedy fan. Stand-up was, I just loved it. I didn't decide to get into stand-up I'm going to be a comedian. I did it as a one-off bucket list dare to say that I'd done it. That was literally my only goal, was to write 5 minutes. I went to open mic gigs and real kind of lower end of the circuit newcomer gigs, because when you think of comedy, especially through the 90s for me, your exposure to it is just the people you see on the telly who are at the top of their game. You think, I could never do that, and you're terrified of giving it a go and being rubbish, because you kind of think, oh, people will be pointing at me in the street for years to come, going, that was the fella, that was the, it was him, it was him. And I went to watch these kind of low-end open mic gigs, and I saw people, you know, dying on their ass. And by the time I left, I couldn't even remember their name. And I thought, well, that's how safe it is. Even if it's terrible, it's terrible for 10 minutes. And then no one's going to remember they even saw me. So that was the approach to having a go. Now, even when it came around to the first day of doing it, I had no performance skills going into it before this, apart from early school nativities, you know. And so I took 2 days off work. I was so sick.
Beforehand?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
With nerves?
Yeah. Yeah, I was, you know, but it was just something I wanted to say I'd done. And I got enough laughs, and I thought, you know what, I'll do that again and then again, and it became a hobby then.
So after the first one, you just thought, I enjoyed that so much, I'm going to do it again. It was as simple as that.
Yeah, it was literally, that wasn't that bad. That was quite fun. I got enough laughs. Let's have another go.
With the same stuff at the same place or different
place. And I think, you see, back when you're new, you think that in order to be good at comedy, you need to be doing different things every gig, and you're constantly writing these new ideas. And I suppose you're really underplaying yourself, because you're not home in anything. You know, you're going, well, I've done that once, now I should write something else. Whereas that's not what the game is, really. You need to get it working, the material that you've got. But it just became, you can't avoid bad gigs as a comedian. I've had them, everyone's had them. Frank Skinner's had them, Eddie Izzard's had them, everybody's had bad gigs. But I suppose I was lucky that I didn't have one until, you know, I was into doing it as a hobby. If, you know, I've had gigs where, you know, in my first year maybe, where I go, well, if that was the first one, I never would have done it a second time. Because by the time I'd had one, I'd had enough good ones and gone, well, this just must happen from time to time. This must just be a thing that happens, rather than, if it's the first one, oh, God, I can't do it. Run for the hills. So I was lucky from that perspective that I, you know, the first time I had a bad one, I'd had at least 12 or 13 good ones or whatever.
You love what you do then, don't you?
Love it. Yeah. Yeah. It's such highs and such troughs, you know, peaks and troughs. And it's joyous and it's difficult, and it's difficult because, you know, I'm very self-critical, as I think a lot of people, you know, who are in creative things can be. You're exposed to critique, especially with social media, in terms of you know, reviewers and the internet now. Even if you get a bad review, it's there for everybody. It's not just the people that were in Scunthorpe on a certain night, you know. It's on the internet. You know, everything I do now is you know, in terms of TV stuff, is there for everybody to see. And part of that fear of failure, I think, makes me prepare, and I really put the work into things.
So how do you prepare then?
It depends what it is, you know. If it's you know, well, I mean, for example, I'm doing a tour starting in January.
Yeah, you're doing a tour that's going everywhere for the whole of the year. I don't think you've got a second off.
So, well, at the minute, I'm doing a work in progress tour, and so that work in progress tour, I'm doing 20-day tour, a small date, to get the show ready for that tour. But even before the work in progress tour, I did some work in progress dates to prepare myself for that. And then before that, I spent the last 4 months doing clubs, getting the material. So
you're doing work in progress.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tour.
Just at all levels.
I'm knackered already for
making sure that everything works, because I want
it
to be good.
How does it work? So I'm not a stand-up. Absolutely, couldn't be further from it. But I know how I prepare for TV shows and for podcasts and for radio shows. But for stand-up, you're having to do it, you're practicing to see whether somebody finds something funny. If they find that funny, do you then keep it in, or do you hone that? Or I mean, I don't know the process.
Yeah, so like I haven't got the personality that can turn up and do an hour of new stuff I'm just going to go and do an hour and see if any of this is funny. I need to go into an hour knowing that I've tried most of this out in clubs.
Wow.
And so I'll do, if I'm doing 20 minutes at a club, I will drop in new bits, and I will, if they get laughs, I will try and add more laughs, and I will try and make it longer, and I will try and make it better. So that by the time I get to do these work in progress things, which I'm doing like an hour 20 on stage at the minute, I'm turning up knowing that most of this has been tried and tested, and people in clubs have been laughing when they have turned up, not to watch me, but to have a night out, and it was funny enough to make them laugh rather than
people that
have turned up to watch me specifically, okay. And I'm still writing at the minute and still getting the tour together, but it's probably 95% there at the minute. But as you say with TV as well, it depends what it is. If I'm doing Have I Got News For You, I will read two papers a day for the week, and I don't take notes on with me or anything like that.
You don't take any notes?
No.
Must have a very big brain to hold it all in.
Do you know what it is I will read the papers. I will have an awareness of everything that's gone on that week. I'll have some killer jokes, what I think in my head, and I'll try, and I will forget half of them during the show, but I will remember some of them. And I think the key with that show is to not be too much of a stickler for jokes you want to crowbar in, but to listen to everybody else and banter and comedy will happen, if I'm doing QI, the best thing you can do is watch QI. Get yourself in that frame of mind, because you turn up and you don't know what's going to happen. So if I'm doing QI, I'll spend the day watching old episodes of QI.
Oh, that's fantastic. But 8 out of 10 cats, when you did that, they blindfolded the contestant. That was so clever.
So the countdown one, it's this is what I'm talking about. I am so competitive. So when I did Cats...
Are you really?
Yeah, so when I did 8 out of 10 Cats Does Countdown, for the first time, I knew that they thought, well, this will be funny, won't it? Because it's a very visual game, and Chris will make it funny if he's rubbish at it. So I am not exaggerating here. I must have watched 60 episodes of Countdown, right? And I came up with ways of building the words in my head. I came up with ways of doing the number round in my head. And these strategies of remembering the numbers. I remembered the numbers in like a telephone keypad pattern.
You're never going to have Alzheimer's because your brain is working 20 times faster than anybody else's.
Well, I came up with these methods and I went on and I battered everybody. I thought, wouldn't it be what would be funnier than the blind guy being rubbish was if the blind guy was really good at it? So I went on and but the one bit I couldn't prepare was the conundrum, because they don't tell you like what the letters are for the conundrum. So I never practiced that, and I went on and just by fluke, I got the conundrum, and I nearly had a panic attack. I didn't know what to do with my arms. My arms were flat.
I love that.
Yeah. So prepare.
So you prepare for everything. Are you like that at home? With the family? I mean, are you Mr. Organised and prepared at home? I have this sort of picture of you being the one that, right, this is it. It's now 8:25. We're doing this. Are you very prepared and organised?
Absolutely not. No, I'm a nightmare. I can never remember where I've left anything. I prepare for things where there's opportunity that I need to make the most of, and where there's a chance that I could look stupid if I don't.
Okay, so you don't mind looking stupid with your family?
No, that's it.
You see.
There you go.
There we go.
And I don't mind looking a bit silly on the telly. You got to ride with it, I don't want to be unprofessional on the telly.
Yeah, but not taking yourself seriously is so important. And I get the feeling that, I mean, even though you say you prepare, that you're quite happy to not take yourself too seriously.
No, you've got to take your job seriously and don't take yourself seriously.
Yes.
I think that's the balance, isn't it?
I could not agree more. Can we just talk about then travelling?
Yeah.
So for you as a blind person, travelling is tricky, let's be honest. But yet what that series, I'm going to say the title of it wrong again, aren't I? Because I keep saying the wonders of the world that I can't see.
Oh, there's no that either.
No, you see, I put a there and a that.
If I was better at English, I'd be able to tell you you're putting in too many prepositions or whatever. I don't even know what they are. But wonders of the world,
listen,
I can't
I'm always
see.
Putting in too many words. That's me. Everything's always fabulous, amazing, fantastic. But it was just incredible. I loved that show.
Yeah, it was...
Did you love doing it?
I was made up how it turned out, you know, because I was really heavily involved in all of the post stuff as well, in terms of putting it together with the director and the producer and in the edit and doing all the voiceover for it and stuff like that. And I think we were all really happy with how it turned out and what we managed to create, really. Because it's, as I said, it's a very fine line between creating a show that shows what it's like for myself to go traveling, whilst, you know, not taking itself too seriously, yeah. Really creating an entertainment show that's funny to everybody, mm. and not bashing people over the head with the same thing all the time, you know. And to get to go away with Harry Hill and Lisa Tarbuck. Yes. Well, I mean,
yeah.
It's nuts, isn't it?
Are you going to do more?
I mean, I'd love to. Yeah, I'd love to.
Is it happening?
I hope so. Yeah, and I mean, I hope so. I would if I could, but I'm waiting to hear. So
it's, make it happen. Whoever's listening, do it.
There are people with a far higher pay grade than me who need to,
oh, well,
need to make their mind up.
And if people haven't seen it, then they can go on to Channel 4.
It's on Channel 4, yeah. It's on there. There's four episodes. And honestly, I was so made up with the feedback from it, from the viewers, in terms of, you know, how it was received. It just really seems to, you know, made people laugh in all the right ways.
Oh, it was joyous. But I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I feel now we're talking about it, I want to go and watch it again. It's that good. I want to go and watch it all over again.
I got to spend 5 days in Niagara Falls with Lisa Tarbuck, and that for me
What could be better?
Oh, she's so much fun.
She's fantastic.
Yeah.
But so, look, listen, it was you as well. You're just, I'm going to use a really old-fashioned term. I think you're really charming.
Oh, thank you.
You have real...
I'd rather sexy.
Okay, I'll give you sexy. You can have sexy as well. You can have sexy charm. You can have...
Yeah. No.
Can we just talk about the tour? So we just mentioned, I'm going to get it up here, the list of places. You're going, I mean, it's everywhere. You start at the beginning of January next year, 9th of January. And the last one that you've got on here so far is the 13th of December. I mean, okay, I'm not... I can do the months of the year. That's a whole year on tour. That's just extraordinary.
Yeah, well, we stopped for the summer. We got a few months off over the summer.
Only a couple. I don't know if they've told you. It's only a couple. I've got here that January, you're starting in Banbury. Yeah. February, you're in Herne Bay. You're at many other places too. March, April, May.
Yeah,
then September, October, November, December.
And we'll carry on to 2025 as well. Is it 2024, 2025? I've lost track of the years.
That's 24.
Yeah, and then 2025 we'll carry on. And it's... I mean, basically...
That's a lot, Chris.
Do you know what? I mean, as I said, I've been doing this 20 years in terms of, you know, clubs up and down the country. And... the fact that people, I mean, I finished my last tour in May that was delayed because of the COVID stuff and all that. And the fact that people are turning up and buying tickets to come and watch me doing a show is just mind-blowing to me, and I love it. And so just make hay while the sun shines, as they say. And,
oh, completely. So where, okay, so for people, I'm actually looking because I'm going to book for London Apollo next December. Oh, my word. So you go to... ChrisMcCausland.com.
This is the thing. This is my own personal anxieties, right?
Okay,
I've always had an anxiety over, will people turn up? Will I sell tickets?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So the last tour, was pretty much sold out across the board, and I was delighted. I was like, oh my god, this is amazing. We've got there. People are the venues are full. And then you do the next one, they go, let's make the venues bigger. And you go, oh, I hope people are...
They will, Chris.
It's like when you go to the gym, you know, you go to the gym and you get used to lifting the weight and you go, I can do it. And they go, let's make it heavier. And you go, I can't do it.
I get that. I completely get that. But there is the fear thing.
Yeah.
For all of us as performers, there is that fear. Are they going to listen? Are they going to watch? Are they going to buy the book? Whatever it is.
Yeah.
And there's that fear behind. And I don't think... people understand, they think, oh, what can you be scared of? You know, everyone knows you, Chris. But there is, that's just you. That's you as a person, not just the performer. You as a person thinking, oh my God, I hope people turn up.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like if somebody has a party. So somebody who's not a performer, but if they have a party, they always say, oh, I hope people come.
Yeah, it's why people, a lot of people don't like their own birthdays, because you enjoy yourself more at other people's birthdays because you haven't got any of that stress, you know.
Also, other people's sandwiches always taste better than yours.
Are you eating other people's sandwiches?
No, I can't because I'm gluten-free, but you know what I mean.
You know, you mean sandwiches they've made for you?
For you,
You're not stealing sandwiches?
No, I'm not going around stealing. I wouldn't know if it was gluten. Hello, is that gluten-free? I'll take that one.
Yeah.
No, but you know,
why are you asking? No reason. Just carry on.
Do you know, years ago, there was a TV show called Candid Camera.
Yeah.
Do you remember it?
Yeah.
And there was a sketch on it, which is still my most favourite sketch. And I have done this thing where you sit... This is so pathetic of me to admit this. I don't know if I've ever admitted it before. Where there was a sketch where somebody would be sitting there having chips and then strangers would just lean over and take a chip and then and they'd carry on and they think, what? And I've done it because it made me laugh when I was a child so much. I've done it as an adult.
Oh, my goodness. I don't remember that sketch.
Oh, it's... properly funny. I do things like that. I'm a bit naughty.
My favourite, because I used to be able to see, obviously, and my favourite kind of visual kind of sketch of that type was on You've Been Framed. And yeah. I just always remember this sketch of this little toddler with an Easter basket trying to pick an egg up and put it in the basket. And every time they stood up to put it in, the basket swung and it kind of went through the gap of the handle in the basket. And they put it in and then they'd look down and see it was still on the floor. And the confusion on this kid's face as they did it over and over again. And
heaven. Heaven.
Still one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
They should do a candid camera with you setting people up.
Yeah, what would I do? What would I
do? Let's come up with it now.
Yeah.
But it'd be so funny. Because they wouldn't expect you to do those things.
I know, but then I'd put people off ever helping someone who can't see it ever again, wouldn't they? Just in case they've got they're terrified they're on camera.
That man is a sick man. Why have you let him do this on television?
Yeah.
So for going on tour with the family, how does that work with real life and going all around the country? I know you've got lovely Graham, who's with you today, and he drives you. What a nice man. A nice man Graham is.
But we're like an old married couple. He's been driving me for over 10 years now. So
I love that you ordered his coffee. You knew exactly how he liked his coffee. Perfect. but how do you do it with family and touring all the time? You must just get knackered.
You know what? It's not as bad as people think. Once the show's done, The real kind of mentally draining bit is getting the show ready, things, trying to work it out, trying to write it. At the minute, I'm doing the work in progress shows and writing the tour and making sure once it works, you know, we sit in the car, we put a book off Audible, or we listen to music, we go and do the show, we have some food, we move around. And especially in this country, you know, most of it, you're back home that night.
That's good.
Probably about 40% of it, we do hotels. And it's really not as bad as people think. I mean, I probably, you know, I'm used to doing gigs anyway, you know, across the circuit, across the country. So this for me is a more rewarding, more laid back, enjoyable version of 15, 16, 17 years slugging it up and down the country,
on
the circuit. So,
and you know, when you talk about it each time, you just have the biggest smile on your face. And I love that when there's that reaction from somebody.
Yeah.
You said you're listening to music on the road. I want to know what you listen to now. I'm very nosy.
Okay. So, I mean, I love music so much. And I think most comedians, you know, would drop it all today if they could be a frontman in a rock band or whatever. I grew up with the Seattle scene of the 90s, you know, so I'm massive into, you know, all the grunge bands, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, Nirvana, Alice in Chains. That was me.
Yeah.
You know, what I grew up with through my teenage years. And then, you know, since then, you know, I love a bit of everything, but I love a bit of metal, love a bit of 60s, 70s, but
so you just love
bands, you know.
Do you go to gigs? Do you go to
tons. Yeah, not as many as I used to.
Because you're so busy traveling the country, doing your thing.
Yeah, and I don't drink anymore either. So I'm the boring one in the group now. So
yeah, but it doesn't matter. Listen, I don't drink either, and everybody always thinks, oh, it's so funny. People's reaction if you don't drink, it's very odd, isn't it? Do people treat you differently now you don't drink?
Yeah, my mates tell me I'm boring.
Really, every time. Tell them to come and talk to me because I think you're. Not at all.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put that word with you at all.
Love live music, though. You know, last summer, favourite band's Pearl Jam. Last summer, I saw both Hyde Park concerts. And
you love
it? As a band should, they did two completely different shows each night. And that's what you want. I mean, that's what you want from a band, isn't it?
Oh, I love that. I love that you get so much enjoyment out of what you do and where you go. Chris, I think you are a complete and utter delight. Channel 4, if you're listening right now, give this man... another series. Give him another three years of that, please.
Yeah, Channel 4.
Yeah, yeah. Let's
come
do
on.
That. And give you some more stand-up specials and things as well.
Yeah. I mean, without the stand-up, we filmed the last one. The last stand-up tour is on Channel 4 as well. So we filmed it. It's up there. People can
watch
it.
That's why I said more.
But yeah, so keep on, you know, film the next one as well.
Yeah.
But it's the doing it that's the fun. You know, it's the travelling around and playing the different places. It's just joyous, really.
We should get Graham here and ask him how he feels. He's behind the glass. We should actually ask him how feels.
Don't ask him how he feels about watching the same show every night. It'd be the opposite.
He's all right. He's smiling. Chris, you're a joy. Thank you very much.
Oh, what a pleasure. Cheers, Gab.